Sam Adams came down from Cairo to meet Penrod when his ship docked in Alexandria. Almost his first words were, "We have all read the book. Serda is as pleased as a cat with a saucer of cream. London was starting to have second thoughts about rebuilding the army. Gladstone and those other idiots were dithering with the idea of using the money to build a bloody great dam on the Nile instead of giving it to us. Miss Benbrook's book created such a rumpus in the house that they changed their dim minds sharpish. Kitchener has another £1 million, and so the devil with the dam. Now we will certainly have new Maxim guns. As for myself, well, we desperately need a good number two if we're to have any chance of retaining the Nile Cup this year." After my brief meeting with the Serda, I estimate that he is not likely to set aside much time for polo. Adam's wife had found and rented a comfortable house for Penrod on the bank of the river, close to Army headquarters and the Jazeera Club. When Penrod climbed the steps to the shady veranda, a figure in a plain white jibba and turban rose from his seat beside the front door and made a deep salaam.
"Effendi, the heart of the faithful Yakub has pined for you as the night awaits the dawn."
The next morning, Penrod found out what Kitchener and Adams had in store for him. He was to recruit and train 3 companies of camel cavalry to travel far and fast and fight hard. "I want men from the desert tribes," he told Adams. "They make the best soldiers. Abdullahi has driven many of the Ashraf out of Sudan, emirs of the Jarlin and the Hadendawa. I want to go after them. Hatred makes a man fight harder. I believe I shall be able to turn them against their former masters."
"Find them," Adams ordered.
Penrod and Yakub took the steamer to Aswan. Here they waited 36 hours for the sailing of another boat that would carry them up beyond the first cataract as far as Wadi Halfa. Penrod left Yakub at the dock to guard the baggage and went alone to the gate at the end of the narrow winding alley. When old Liala heard his voice, she flung open the gate and collapsed in a heap of faded robes and veils, wailing pitifully.
"Effendi, you have come back! You should have spared my mistress. You should never have returned here."
Penrod lifted her to her feet.
"Take me to her."
"She will not see you, Effendi."
"She must tell me that herself. Go to her, Liala. Tell her I am here."
Sobbing pitifully, the old woman left him beside the fountain in the courtyard and tottered into the back quarters. She was gone a long time. Penrod picked tiny green flies from the flowering fuchsias and dropped them into the pool. The perch rose to the surface and gulped them down. Liala returned at last. She had stopped weeping.
"She will see you."
She led him to the bead screen.
"Go in."
Bakita sat on a silk rug on the far side of the well-remembered room. He knew it was her by her perfume. She was heavily veiled.
"My heart fills with joy to see you safe and well, my lord."
Her soft, sweet voice tugged at his heart.
"Without you, Bakita, that would not have been possible. Yakub has told me of the part you played in bringing me to safety. I have come to thank you."
"And the English girl's Arabic name is Al-Zahra. I am told that she is young and very beautiful. Is that so, my lord?"
"It is so, Bakita."
He was not surprised that she knew. Bakita knew everything.
"Then she is the one we spoke of? The girl of your own people who will be your wife? I am happy for you.
We will still be friends, you and I."
"Friends, and more than that," she said softly. "Whenever there is something that you should know, I will write to you."
"I will come to you. Perhaps."
"May I see your face once more before I go, Bakita?"
"It would not be wise." He went to her and knelt in front of her.
"I want to see your lovely face again, to look into your eyes and to kiss your lips one last time. I beg of you, Lord of my heart, spare me this thing."
He reached out and touched her veil.
"May I lift it?"
She was silent for a while, and then she sighed.
"Perhaps, after all, it would be easier this way," she said.
He lifted the veil and stared at her. Slowly she watched the horror dawn in his eyes.
Bakita. Oh, my dear heart, what has happened to you?
His voice trembled with pity. It was the smallpox. Allah has punished me for loving you. The pockmarks were still fresh and livid. Her luminous eyes shone in the ruins of the face that had once been so lovely.
Remember me as once I was, she pleaded.
I will remember only your courage and your kindness, and that you are my friend, he whispered, and bent forward to kiss her lips.
It is you who are kind, she replied.
Then she reached up and covered her face with the veil.
Now you must leave me.
He stood up.
I shall return. Perhaps you will, Effendi.
But they both knew he never would.